27 minutes past the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, and that means nothing less than a visit from Dr. Don Clark. Don is a member of the board at Creation Moments. He's a vintner. He lives in a beautiful place, Garden Valley, it's called, and with good reason, out about 80 miles east of Dallas, aren't you? You're east of Dallas there.
We are east of Dallas, west of Shreveport, but east of Dallas.
Yeah, almost Louisiana, but not quite, which is okay with Don because he hails from Louisiana. Not Shreveport, Baton Rouge? Where were you raised?
Well, I went to school in Baton Rouge for a number of years, but I'm actually originally from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Nolens, okay.
Yes.
Well, is life different when you're raised in Louisiana? I don't know a lot of people from Louisiana. Most of them tend to stay there, I think.
I wouldn't say that. There's a lot of folks from Louisiana around here.
Yeah.
I think the hurricane drove people.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Katrina.
Out of New Orleans, and then there, a lot of them landed in Baton Rouge, but some continued to migrate westward.
A lot of them came up north to Tyler there from Houston. They got to Houston and said, well, this is not for us. moved on to your neck of the woods.
Then some of them wound up and stayed here. Some of them have gone back because the city has been rebuilt. It got pretty devastated with the flood from Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, we got some people here too who gravitated from Louisiana after that. Speaking of the weather, we've got a subject here. We were talking about heat waves pretty much across the country experienced some, even up there in East Dakota, David, you had a heat wave. It lasted about 5 minutes, but it was a heat wave.
It was good.
Just passed through.
It didn't last that long.
No. But the rest of us, down in Texas here, we've been over 100 virtually every day for, I'd say, at least 6 weeks now here in Central Texas. Don's had similar weather just a little bit east of us there. Heat waves have a history, don't they? Now, I'm going to read this opening paragraph. This is an article that appears on realclimatescience.com. You can also find it on the Cornwall Alliance. And it starts out by saying, hot weather. Many a man has mopped his brow during the summer months of 1884, declaring it was the hottest weather the world ever knew, which, of course, would not be true. For the extreme heat and the record of the past has not been approached during the late summer. Now, that's excerpted from an old newspaper article. It goes on to read about heat. How do we know about past heat waves? How do we discover that, Don?
Well, there's several means, but
they go back to the 7th century here. Newspapers?
Yeah. Recorded the documents, recorded, you know, history, for example, in news articles, as you just read. But yeah, this article goes back 1500 years, so you know, people are complaining that we're in we're in this climate change and we got this global warming taking place, as if it's new. This is brand new. We haven't had any this much heat ever. And so we're breaking records, in some places maybe breaking records, the least recorded scientific records. But if you go back in the newspapers and commentaries that people have made over the years, you find out that even back in 1627, France and Germany was experiencing a heat wave, and their spring was all dried up. 1879.
Well, if you go back far enough, there was no way to measure the temperature, right? There were not thermometers. But once you creep a little closer to history, and like 16th, 17th century, they had thermometers. And now here's a story from 1718 that talks, I think this must be France. I'm not sure where this is from, but it records temperatures of 113 degrees and didn't rain once from April to October. So the crops were burnt up, the rivers were dried up, and the theaters were closed by decree of the lieutenant of police. Fruit trees flowered twice in the gardens. The heat was extreme in 1746. The summer was very hot and very dry, which absolutely killed off the crops. There's some old newspaper clippings here. I should put this link in the chat window. People can follow this.
Yes, it's an interesting it's not a discussion. It's just presenting the flat facts that, hey, we've got we've had heat, heat waves periodically throughout history, and some of them are like 20 years apart, some of them are 22 or less years apart, and I bet if you take those dates and you go back in time, of course we weren't measuring sunspot activity way back in the 1600s or the 1700s, and so we don't have that data to go by, but sunspots, for example, the sunspot activity has a cycle of approximately 11 years. And so to give you an example, here in Texas, for example, we actually planted our vineyard, and I think I mentioned this last time, we planted our vineyard in 2011. And here in our pond was completely, our 1 acre pond was completely dried up. And now here in 2022, that is 11 years later, we're experiencing another heat wave. And that just so happened to be, just 11 years after the last one. So our pond isn't completely dried up yet, but it is drying up, and it's down probably about 3 to 4 feet, and so we still have fish, and they're still obviously trying to get as much water as they can, but we're in desperate need of some water. But the whole question of this whole heat argument and these heat cycles, the climate change folks would blame man's activity because we're burning all of these fossil fuels, and so therefore we got to take the fossil fuels off the market. We got to stop using fossil fuels, and everybody needs to go to electric vehicles. There's a problem with that, of course. You got to get electricity, and you're not going to get it from wind and solar at least 24 hours a day. So you're going to have to generate energy somehow. And it's curious that these folks don't even go to nuclear power. We can't have nuclear power because, my goodness, if there was a catastrophe, whole cities would be wiped out. And of course, we've got the experience with Chernobyl, but it was that's another story in and of itself. But nuclear power is the cleanest power we could possibly have, and but yet we're not building any nuclear power plants.
And as I understand it, there's a new kind of nuclear power plant, which is much safer. Is it fission versus fusion? There's some change in the technology there too.
The current power plants are fission. That is, you take something like cobalt or whatever, and then you break it apart, and that provides the energy. The fusion reactors, where you take hydrogen, for example, and fuse it together and get deuterium or tritium, also produces energy, but it produces a lot more energy, and it's even a lot cleaner. Now, it takes a lot more energy to start one of those things, and of course, to contain it is a scientific challenge, but they're starting to do that now, and it won't be long before the fusion reactors are available.
There was once talk even about having a fusion automobile engine. I mean, they can make them small. I'm not sure if that's a good idea or not, but I guess it's within the realm of technically of what we can do.
Yes, technically it would be possible. It depends on, of course, the containment of these things and how much space you need in order to contain it, and how heavy that containment needs to be, because you are talking about radioactive materials being generated out of the process, not only a lot of heat. And so anyway, there's alternative energy sources, which, you know, folks aren't even talking about, but even, you know, won't even let you talk about it because they're so bent on, well, you know, we need wind turbines and we need solar panels and everybody's got to have solar panels on their houses. Not everybody. I mean, if you live in a climate where you don't have any sun, what good is a solar panel going to be for you? And if you don't have any wind, what good is a wind turbine going to be? And, you know, of course, if you have a solar panel, it takes the sun in order to generate the electricity. And so at night, you know, you're not going to have any electricity being generated.
I can see those things as supplemental, but not as the basic provider of electric power. I mean, to me, that's natural gas and nuclear.
Well, and, you know, we've had coal-fired plants, which the fossil fuels actually between natural gas, for example, and the coal-fired plants, coal, which we have a lot of in this country, natural gas, which we have a lot of. We had a lot of it in Louisiana, for example. You could smell it coming out of the swamps, and you can smell it sometimes at a dump site because it's naturally produced as the organic waste is being broken down by the bacteria and the molds and the fungus and everything. So it's a natural, yes, it's a natural product. Yes, it's it can stink. Actually, natural gas, if you're talking about methane, it doesn't stink, you know, so much.
Yeah, I think the gas company actually adds a scent so you can tell if there's a leak. I mean, they add a scent to that stuff.
Exactly. So, yeah. And so, but those, you know, are available and, you know, we can generate electricity that way. 80% of our electrical power actually comes from fossil fuel, you know, plants. So to replace all of those, of course, it would be not only a tremendous cost, but would be a big shift in how we do business.
Well, I've got to say I am most thankful for air conditioning this summer. I mean, it's hard to. I remember listening to when I lived in Scottsdale, Arizona for several summers, and was struck by the heat there, and heard stories of the early pioneers long before the days of air conditioning. Would actually soak their sheets in water, their bed sheets, take them outside to a raised platform and sleep outside wrapped in those wet sheets just to be able to get to sleep. There are all kinds of ways of dealing through heat for history, but through history, you know, if you live on a lake or something, maybe that's kind of nice up north there in David's part of the country. But climate is in all of our minds with heat waves this summer and all the talk and all the movies. There was a movie not long ago, and I can't remember the name, but it was about Arctic cold creeping down across the North American continent, down as far as Mexico, and how it had sent people into a panic and you know, started wars and violence, and we're sensitive to the weather. Such movies have been appearing where I've seen where heat is the topic and where cold is the topic and where storms are the topic. And it all lends to the feeling that things are going downhill. Are movies and books the cause or the effect of that?
What are you trying to transition to another topic?
Well, the best I could do, yeah.
I'm sorry. I felt like I dozed off there for a second. Did somebody change topics?
Well, pay attention, David.
We haven't changed topics yet. We're merging into another topic.
Okay. Okay.
We're getting there. We're kind of stepping lightly into it.
Known as a segue, David. Pay attention.
This is the moment of transmission.
Yeah.
I mean, books, of course, you know, books over the eons when books were being printed and available, that has influenced people's thinking quite a bit. And of course, then when movies became popular, people started going to the movies. And your impression on life then got challenged, let's say, depending on what the movie was. And so all of these...
Like Al Gore's book, Inconvenient Truths.
Oh, it was very inconvenient. Unfortunately, his was not truth. So this whole topic of climate change, for example, is and that it's been, you know, the heating of the earth and we go through cycles. It's a natural phenomenon. Primarily directed, influenced by the sun. And the main point is it's not influenced by by man's activity. I read an article recently that showed that man's active influence on the climate is like at the most 0.3%. And so 0.3% versus 99.7% natural, man's not having any impact on the environment.
Now, are we talking about strictly about CO2 when we talk about man's effect? Is that strictly carbon dioxide?
No, it's not just carbon dioxide. It's methane. It's water. Methane has a much higher effect on the on global warming, if you will, than CO2. CO2 is a very poor greenhouse effect gas, if you will. But water is much more efficient, and so is methane and some of the other hydrocarbons. So we blame everything on CO2 because people can understand that, and we can do away with the cows. We must do away with the cows because of the problems that they're causing. And so that allows us to take over farming and other agendas that come along with it. Now, you mentioned books and movies influencing the culture.
Yes, or even just the sense of the direction we're headed in. I mean, do we take that stuff seriously, too seriously maybe? Is it that impactful?
Well, I think it is impactful. I'll give you an example from the creation evolution movement. From the evolution movement, there was a movie that came out, the Stokes trials, for example, the monkey trials, and the movie twisted the actual results of the trials. So there was a biology teacher who was prompted, I believe it was by the ACLU, for example, to teach evolution in the classroom.
And this was what, Tennessee, 1926, I think.
It was a while back.
Stokes trial. Yeah.
So he went along with it, and he taught evolution. He was charged of breaking the law because it was a law not to teach evolution back then, and he lost the trial. However, in the movie, they twisted things around where he won the trial, and that spearheaded teaching evolution in the classrooms. And so how much effect does movies have on people and the public opinion? You know, a lot. It can have a lot. So, and even all of the propaganda that we're getting through the media these days, it influences people. Even before before this last election, Google and Facebook were championing the idea. Oh, we can influence about 3 million plus people's votes by what we allow people to see. And so, manipulating the media, of course, it was newspapers way back when and books way back when. Then we had radio programs and then of course, we had the movies. And so now we have TikTok, we have YouTube, we have, the kids are watching all of this stuff. And they're being impacted and influenced. So in my mind, they're being manipulated, of course. They're being manipulated into a false understanding as to who they are. and who God created them to be. So they lose their identity in who God created them to be, not as a special creation of His, and not, you know, as, you know, daughters and sons of God, but that we're just products of evolution, and therefore we're no different than animals, and we can therefore behave as such. And guess what? You know, science teaches us, or at least Darwin taught us, that it's survival of the fittest. And so if you survive, if you want to survive, you've got to beat out your competitor, which is your other fellow human being. And so everything turns from a, you know, God teaches, for example, that we are to love one another. We are to help one another. We are, and for Christians, we are commanded in Ephesians chapter 5, for example, to submit to one another. But the world teaches just the opposite, that, hey, you are your own person. You can do whatever you want. As a matter of fact, how you think and how you feel is really who you are, and it has nothing to do with the outside world's influences, especially the traditions, the old traditions of man as it regards to religion, because that puts restrictions on you, and we need to cast those off and just become who you think or feel that you are. And that, of course, leads to all kinds of problems, because now you've lost your identity, your true identity, and you're trying to come up with other identities. And so, you know, Freud came in and said, hey, everything's about sex. Everything, man's behavior is all about sex. And so, therefore, that's who you are. That's your identity. Your identity is your sex. And then, of course, we got this idea that, well, I feel like I'm a woman, so therefore I happen to be in a man's body, and you know, my body is wrong, but my feelings are right. And so, therefore, we have now all of this transgender, you know, type of things. And it's all based on feelings. It's not based on true identity, not based on biology, obviously. It's not based on how God created.
But the perception is, and the only way to correct that is through education, which is kind of a long-term deal. I don't know how you switch these trends quickly. But what
But education is part of the problem. Education is now teaching that it's okay. Matter of fact, back when we were in California, and I was working for a pharmaceutical company back in California, the schools, you know, were teaching that it's okay to, and, you know, if some of you feel that you're homosexual, the studies have shown that 10% of the population is homosexual. So we've got to allow that to be expressed. And so they were starting to teach that in school. The only problem with the study was that it was done with inmates in prison, and you know, man left to himself, he needs to relieve his sexual desires. So therefore, you know, 10% of the guys in prison, for example, were acting out on 10% on other men. And so it was a false study to begin with. But be that as it may, it was taught way back in the 70s, and now it is inundated. Our kids are inundated from every angle to going to gay pride parades. Why parents ever take their kids to a gay pride parade is beyond me, but they are, because they've been fooled by society that, oh, these, we need to love these people. And yes, we need to love the person, but not their sin, and not expose our children to the sexual exploitation that is taking place in the streets.
Okay, I want to take this a little bit beyond gender, though, because I'm also I'm thinking that books like 1984 and Animal Farm, both by George Orwell, written back in the late 40s during the dawn of the nuclear age, and I'm wondering if there's a tie-in, because it talks about the politics and the social pressure to, you know, it's basically about socialism and communism and totalitarianism and how one leads to the other. These are very political. And now, at your age and my age, we look back and say, Orwell had something there. So I'm wondering whether he actually sculpted the future or simply warned us. What's your thought?
I think he was definitely warning us, just like Ayn Rand was warning us about the dangers of communism, and mm-hmm. she's, you know, with her books.
Her books in the 30s, yeah. So now we're going back 90 years.
Yeah, and so, you know, folks have seen the signs, and we have people today that are warning us. It's just that the opposition is now so loud that, oh, socialism is good. We need to, everybody needs to be equal. Well, you know, so therefore, if you have $500, then I must have $500, or at least we can split it, and you give me $250 of your $500. Now we are equal mm-hmm. in the amount of money that we have. And that's a very dangerous philosophy, because we know that while we are all created equal by our Creator God, we all do not have the same abilities as everyone. We are a mix of abilities. Some are super smart and can solve a problem almost instantly. Others, they can't solve a problem if you gave them 100 years. So we know that people are not don't have the same skills or abilities. So some are going to be leaders, some are going to be followers, and some are going to be workers.
We're all gifted in different ways, because there's a different plan and purpose for each of us from the Creator God. And that's an idea we have to get used to. Society creates ideals, you know, whether it's movies and movie stars and superheroes or whatever, that things we can't possibly live up to as real people. And I think we need to stop and recognize that God loves us each, has designed us each to be able to do certain things, and that He needs us to do those things.
Yes, and we need to understand how God designed us, so we can stop. You know, we can stop worrying about, oh, I don't measure up in this area. Well, you may not measure up in that area, but this other area you excel. And so, you know, let's talk about the areas that you excel in, and glorify God in that matter, rather than tearing ourselves down and then imagining that we're something else because that's, you know, we feel like we are somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should all be doing our part in fighting the slide that so many of us seem to be aware of in society generally. I hesitate to say take a look at Revelation, but I can't help it. Just take a look at it. See how things seem to fit
coming.
In.
We know it's coming. yes, I think, and we didn't even talk about technology's influence on our society today, which could be another topic for
maybe
discussion.
We'll tackle that next week. It's pretty heavy stuff when you consider it all. There is a link to each of the articles we've talked about, and I know it sounds like there were 12 of them, but there are two of them. And they're in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. And particularly that Twisted Self article is one that our pastor sent out to everybody in our congregation yesterday. It's well worth a read. Kind of a long article, but you can learn a lot from those two. The other one's on heat waves. Dr. Don Clark, a member of Creation Moments, a board member. Yeah, in fact, he's the vice chair. They'd be the VC, of Creation Moments. CreationMoments.com is their website, and there's a library of scientific material that explains and supports the biblical story of creation. It's a good place to visit, CreationMoments.com. Don, thanks. We'll talk to you again next week. Take care of yourself, and good luck with those grapes. Hope you get some rain.
Yes, we desperately need it. Hopefully, we'll have some this afternoon or tomorrow.
Okay. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
See you, Don. Thanks a lot.